The forecast looks favorable for Father's Day weekend, and whether you're the designated driver, griller, or just plain chiller with family and friends, you're hopefully not in the same boat as Scott Benner, tasked with the endless job of doing laundry, or so he claims in his ode to fatherhood entitled, Life is Short, Laundry is Eternal, Confessions of a Stay-at-Home Dad. Scott, thanks for putting down the stain remover and joining us this evening.
Dave, I really appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
First off, the title. What's that about?
It's really the only part of being a stay-at-home dad that I just don't enjoy is the repetitious nature of the laundry. I don't even think I mind doing the laundry. I mind how it just doesn't seem to stop coming at me. I do it in the morning, you know, before I've even gotten a chance to get out of bed and open my eyes. I do it in the middle of the night. It just piles up and piles up, and nobody appears to actually respect the amount of effort that goes into it, I think.
Now, it seems like you relinquished what you call a series of jobs rather than a career to embark on what to date is now a 12-year-long career.
Yeah, I don't think I had much direction coming out of high school. So I took jobs that I could find, that I could do. And, you know, it started out my uncle's sheet metal shop in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. And then I started working for a credit card company doing collections. I became a graphic designer. I pretty much went anywhere where I thought my skills would lead me to some sort of success.
Did you ever know there was an author inside?
Yeah, you know, I thought there was. When I was a really little kid, in elementary school, my school had this program called the Young Authors Program. And I loved writing. Not all the kids did it, but I loved writing books for it. And I think the most exciting part for me was the books, when they were finished, they'd go on this cart, this library cart, and they'd go around the school where other classes and kids could see them. I loved the idea that somebody was seeing them. And then I tried to write a little more in my late teens and my early 20s. But I found myself repeating themes that I thought had already been covered so well by other people. And I really just came to the conclusion that I hadn't been alive long enough to say anything with any great perspective. So I kind of laid off it, raised my kids, and then my blog came up, and that sort of polished my writing, and then I got back to it.
Two kids, son Cole, daughter Arden, and wife Kelly. She, by contrast, had a career in place?
Yeah. Kelly was, I met Kelly when she was a sophomore in college, I guess, and she already knew what she was doing. She has a great path, and she was very focused. Yeah, she was moving along well by the time we got married.
And let's let listeners note that you have local roots. You were raised apparently in Bucks County, and the book mentions some Philly favorites, our zoo, the Flyers, the Phillies.
I love this place. We moved into Jersey, just a little bit into central New Jersey, but I feel like I'm from Philadelphia. When I want French fries, I come down to Chickies and Pete's.
For whom is this book intended? Fellow stay-at-home dads?
Not just them. I think if you have children or are a child, I think the book's for you. So I think it covers everyone. I think it talks a little bit about what it's like to appreciate your parents. I think it talks about what it's like as a parent to appreciate your children. I really do feel like it covers a lot of different perspectives in different families.
Let's talk about that Phillies game that you cite. You were a 9-year-old boy in 1980 when Tug McGraw triumphantly threw that final pitch. And the reason that example is cited in the book is because it's one of several places throughout where you invoke your father. And that was certainly a complicated relationship.
Yeah. My dad, I was 9 then, the night of that game, when the ironically, my son was 9 the next time the Phillies won the World Series. So I hope I don't have to wait for my grandson to be 9 for it to happen again, because my son's only 13. But
well, your daughter will be 9 next year.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. Let's hope for that. That moment when they won the World Series, I really saw my dad, I think, for the person he really was in that second. Like, he lost control of himself. He wasn't a father. He wasn't concerned with what he was showing us or not showing us. He started running around my house. He was screaming and yelling. He went out on the patio. He started yelling out there. That didn't seem to satisfy his excitement. He ran back into our kitchen, grabbed these pots and pans, took off down the stairs out in the front of that house, and he started just banging them together like crazy. And I couldn't understand what he was doing. I went outside, and I realized I could hear this noise from everywhere. Like, everyone in town was banging these pots and pans together. And I just thought that – I just remember that moment as one of those points when I thought I was seeing my dad for, like, who he was and not who he was trying to be as our father or who he was trying to be as my mother's husband. It just really – I don't know. It was a – it seemed like a window into him, and they didn't occur very often. So it just really stuck with me. And that's why I try to let my kids – see who I am. You know, I don't want them to think of me as smart or more learned than they are. I just think that I'm a person who's just been around longer than they have. I don't want them to see me that way.
And of course, that was from the vantage point of you as a 9-year-old, but looking back on it as an adult, how by contrast was he more typically, if that was a rare show of emotion.
Yeah, my dad was fairly stoic. He was a blue collar guy. He worked really hard, volunteered in our local fire department. He wasn't around very frequently. I think that as I look back now over time, I see that probably moving forward, he was not very faithful to my mom at points. And I can't say enough how his actions ended up shaping how I feel about family. I think people think that their role models are sort of the way you should act, but I really do see my father as a role model. But I feel like he's the guy I look at as a cautionary tale. And I just never wanted to be that guy. I didn't want to ever make a family or people that I loved feel, you know, the way we felt the day he left and the years afterwards.
So in many ways, you were conscious about being a reaction to his parenting style, and yet there was a very poignant reconciliation at the end.
Yeah, my father met a woman in the very end of his life that he was lucky enough to meet. Her name was Martha, and Martha pressed him to get back with his sons. And my brother Brian and my brother Rob and I, we visited with him a number of times. It wasn't as frequently as I think we would have liked. It was difficult. He was an older man by then. He had trouble. Anytime we tried to talk about how we felt, he got a little defensive, and it turned into, well, you don't understand how it was, you know, what it was like and what I had to do. But we did find a balance where we knew each other again, even though it wasn't anywhere near what you would hope. But it did allow me to be at the hospital when he passed, that reconnection.
How old are your children?
My son Cole is 13. And my daughter Arden is 8. She'll be 9 in July.
And are they of an age and a sophistication yet that you can tell your impact on them is already different than what your father's was on yours at a similar age?
Oh, I hope so. Yes, absolutely. My children and I, we have this kind of easy warmth between us and, you know, the touching and hugging. And, you know, my son's 13 and he'll probably not be happy if I say this in places where other people can say it and hear it. But he'll come home and just sort of lean on me for a couple of minutes. And we'll talk, and he hugs me. And then, you know, we start talking about his day. And it just – I don't remember doing that with my father ever. I don't remember feeling like that kind of connection existed, or that if I wanted it to exist, that reaching out and trying to make it happen would have ended up in a positive situation. So, yeah, absolutely.
This book goes through many of life's situations that are familiar to fellow dads, and challenges with Kelly, of course, your spouse, in terms of carving out time to keep that part of the family intact.
Yeah. I mean, the challenges, they range. They range from just, you know, keeping track of day-to-day scheduling and things like that. That sort of is the easy stuff you fall into after a while. I found the biggest challenges when we started out was when we first did the role reversal. There was a lot of confusion on both sides. Like, it was strange to see my wife acting as back then I imagined a man would act in a situation. You know, like, you know, that kind of attitude, like, what do you do all day? And, you know, while I'm at work working. And I realized really quickly it's got nothing to do with gender, right? There's none of the ways we act have anything to do with gender. It's just that it's been set up that way for so long that it's easy to say, oh, that's what women say or that's what men say. You know, I don't care about the laundry room because – you know, I'm a guy. I care about the laundry room because I'm the one stuck doing the laundry. My wife wants to know what's happening at work because she's got that feeling like that I got up this morning and drove and broke my back and I'm home and I made money and I want to know that everybody's working as hard as I am. I think that's just the way the person who works outside of the home just generally, I think it's reasonable for them to feel that way. But in the beginning, it felt strange. And it took a very long time for us to kind of find our footing with that.
It was an evolution on both parts.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it was rocky at some places, too, because you just felt like you were never going to – like it was never going to come together. And then it just sort of magically did one day.
In stereotypic role reversal, you even cite examples where you felt almost embarrassed or ashamed to ask for small bits of money for –
Yeah, I used to put my head down sort of to the side to say to my wife, like, I need shoes. Is that okay? Like, I can buy shoes, right? Like, you know, is that okay with you? Because you made the money. Like, even now, I was – just today, it's funny. I don't feel as strongly about it as I did years ago. But while I was driving here, I knew I had to call and ask my wife to do something that was going to mess up her day. And the person I was talking to said something very stereotypical, like, well, you should send her flowers. And I said, well, what does that do? It's her money. You know, can you imagine when somebody sends you flowers with money you made or buys you a gift with money you made? Like, how is that even a gift? So it's still there a little bit. And I am aware of it and try to be respectful of it, but I'm not scared of it or put off by it anymore.
Over the course of this now 12-year-long career, to what extent have you come across other dads either coincidentally or by design, for that larger sense of community with kindred people going through the same experience?
You know, I've been a stay-at-home dad for 13 years now, and when I did it, it was really strange to people still. Even people my own age sort of looked at me like a little cross-eyed, like, what are you, you quitting your job? And, what, you know, that seems strange to them. But I think I'm pretty comfortable saying that I think those opinions have come swung back around in my direction.
Yeah, but given those societal or family or friends' predispositions, when a mistake or an accident does happen, it must resonate all the more so. There's an early example in the book, and it's happened many times. You thought you lost your kid in the store.
I did, yeah. And the worst part might have been later telling my wife that I thought I lost him in the store. We were just shopping. We were in like one of those big box stores, and he was little, very small, and he wanted to go look at toys. And we were walking up and down the toy aisles, and it got boring after a second. We weren't really going to buy anything. And so we started messing around. I'd let him run away from me a little bit, and then I'd kind of chase him. And I'd be like, hey, here I come. And he'd laugh and giggle. And, you know, he was obviously really young. And this one time, he took this big leap and ran kind of away from me, and I pretended to go after him, and then I thought, ooh, I'm going to double back, go around the other aisle, and I'll surprise him on the other side. And when I got around on the other side, he wasn't there. And I was like, oh, well, he's little. He can't move that fast. So I just went back to where we started, but he wasn't there either. And I can't – it's – you know, I explained it in the book, I think, pretty well, but it was one of the most insane feelings that I've ever had in my life. Like, I could feel – you know, in those movies when they try to show you how big the universe is by starting on the street and then they expand out into space, and you know, I felt like that. I felt like I was looking down at the store like that, trying to imagine, where could he be? Where is he going? Did someone grab him? If they grabbed him, what door would they run to? I've only got one shot to run to that door. And that panic just overtook me. And I just realized in that second, I was like, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to pick the right way to go. And I screamed as loud as I could. And I just yelled, I'm like, I lost my son.
That instinct served you well.
Oh, my gosh. And no one stopped. There was that din of noise in the store, you know, that exists when all those people are sort of talking about nothing in a big space. And so I stopped for a second, and I screamed three times as loud. And I started describing what he looked like while I was screaming. And then the whole place got silent. I'm not kidding. The entire place. And I probably was just a couple of seconds, but it felt like forever. And this woman's voice rang out, and she's like, I have him here. And I started, like, I felt like I was going to cry. And she brought him to me, and I hugged him like I hadn't seen him in 2 decades. But he was probably about 15 feet from me.
And yet that moment of panic, you say, pales in comparison to the tears that have been shed when it was learned that your daughter at age 2 developed type 1 diabetes.
Yeah. So I think I'm a reasonably bright guy. I'm sure bright people don't say that, so maybe I'm not. But I thought I had a really good perspective on the world. I thought I saw things in a fairly clear way. I'm sure we all feel like that. But when Arden was diagnosed when she was 2, you know, type 1 diabetes and probably chronic illness of any kind with your children, it just brings everything into a clarity that's difficult to describe. I probably have a perspective on life now that I don't deserve at my age, because you see what can happen. And you see, you start thinking out into the future about side effects and long-term issues. And you get a chance to look at the world in a really different way. The great part about that is when you misplace your kid in the store for 5 seconds and then you find him, you realize it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to you or is ever going to happen to you. And it really does make life, I don't want to say that there's good things that come from having diabetes, but this might be one. Like, it really does let you appreciate everything else in a new and kind of refreshing way. I don't know if that makes sense.
It sure does. Scott, what's on the plate for you for Father's Day 2013?
My family and I are going on vacation on Saturday. So we're just going to go to a beach and hang out for a little while together and try to absorb all this sort of craziness that's been going on with this book. And everybody's got to recharge. It's been a weird year for my son. It's a transition year at school. And I think it was a little harder for him this year than it has been in the past. And he worked really hard at keeping his grades where they are. And he said to me this morning, you don't usually think of a 13-year-old saying things like this, but he looked right at me while I was making a sandwich, and he goes, I need this vacation to come. And I was like, don't worry, just a couple more days.
You keeping your head over water with the craziness, or you're looking forward to getting back to merely being a stay-at-home dad?
I can't lie, because no one would believe it. This is exciting, and it's fantastic. And I did say to somebody the other day that, you know, this time next year when – maybe I will have a book out next year. But this time next year when there's no book out and I'm not doing all this press, I am going to look back and think, wow, this is pretty boring. Just doing the laundry and keeping the carpet clean might not compare to sitting down talking with people like you.
Scott Benner, happy Father's Day. Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
It was really a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Scott Benner, author of Life is Short, Laundry's Eternal, Confessions of a Stay-at-Home Dad, and you can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org.